danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. With every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number and taken away your name.
Not at all. I know exactly what I'm doing. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am your host, Andrew Farmer, recording from a non-disclosed location where the internet is not great. So if you notice anything with my voice or any dropping, just chalk it up to the fact that I have had to go to Project Rubicon and hide in a basement somewhere in my second dungeon. It's like Nick Fury's weird harbor base. And with me, as always, is my producer, co-host, life partner, and therapist, the Jedi Cole Houston.
I'm wearing a fake beard, by the way.
Just
for this episode.
And that's it.
Fake beard over my real beard. Well, that's all that was here. I got here. There was a fake beard and a lanyard, and that was it.
A lanyard. You wore it to the lanyard. Patton Oswalt gave you the lanyard.
Well, they gave me the lanyard because the card at the end of the lanyard was large enough and the lanyard long enough that it kind of dangles precariously in front of my area.
Right. Well, you assumed, with all due respect, you assumed that there was going to be a trench coat involved because, I mean, why wouldn't you assume that?
Given the topic of this week's episode.
Which we've now gone 3 minutes without talking about. By the way, the topic of tonight's episode is Cole came up with the topic. As you all know now, I've been in the process of relocation and things have been a little up in the air. So we needed something that we could talk about. Cole went with Secret Agent Man. That's different than Secret Asian Man, which is what I thought he said when he told me. Even though there's at least one Secret Asian Man we will talk about tonight. And you know, it's great. It didn't occur to me, but it's a wonderful topic. So tonight we are talking about all things spy in the comic book world.
Well, yes, the spy, the clandestine world, the secret societies, as well as the government agencies,
right?
That exist to protect us against things
now,
in comics.
So my first question to you, upon research, is this. Is it okay? So do we? Is it a panacea? Do we need all these secret government agencies and comic books? Or is having superheroes on your speed dial enough? You know, is S.H.I.E.L.D. necessary? Is S.W.O.R.D. necessary? Is Argus necessary? I mean, if you go do some research, I implore you to do this. Maybe we can post a link when we actually post the show. I implore you to go to Wikipedia and type in. Fictional espionage organizations. The list is staggering, and it's all. It's like they
I would like to say most of it comes from comics.
Yes, it does, and TV series. TV series, Andy. It's not series. But yes, you're right, and they're ridiculous. That's my problem with it, is that everything is an acronym and everything is ridiculous.
Yeah, sometimes it's a bit of a stretch to try to find something, some way to make your anagram work.
Yeah. Do they start with the name and then try to shoehorn? Because I find it hard to believe that somebody in the Marvel Universe sat down and decided it was going to be, the name of our organization, as we've come up with it in committee, is the Global Reaction Agency of Mysterious and Paranormal Activity. Obviously, the name writes itself. We are going to be called Grandpa. Like, I don't think that happens, you know, like...
Yeah, well, it's like, I always felt that, to go a little off the comics... that the founders of Spectre just settled on revenge. You know, they went up and down the dictionary. They had their little underlings looking everywhere. how about revenge? It has a ring to it. Do we do revenge? Was that a thing we could actually do? Is that a verb?
Right. Can we just can we say that it's better than reticence or you know? Yeah, good. Yeah, let's go with revenge. Yeah, okay. All in favor? All right. I agree. But there are some winners in this list of like a super of TV show and like fictional espionage groups. Do you have any favorites outside of Spectre that you really like?
There's one, everybody loves them some S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, you got, that's the old standby. But there have been some unusual ones. Like there was like a secret group in when Peter David was writing the Hulk. And I don't even know they didn't have like a letter name.
Right.
Kind of buck tradition in that respect. But they went with, like, everybody had to be shoehorned into some classical mythology names.
Okay.
Like Atalanta, or not to be confused with Atlanta, which a lot of people were doing.
or Atlanta, the, you know, the city. No, not to be confused with that.
Or Atlantis, the other ill-fated city, if you will. So I'm trying to recall what the name it was, but basically, you know, they had like Ajax and Atalanta, and apparently there were a lot of A names in the classical mythos.
They didn't get much further. They stuck with the beginning of the alphabet really hard.
Pantheon was the name.
Okay. That makes sense. I liked... Are you familiar with Strike?
I guess they wound up allying themselves with the then Smart Hulk.
Oh, okay. The Pantheon. Okay, I know what you're talking about. So yeah.
Everybody was forced to take on names of different classical mythological characters.
See, I like you. We know what S.H.I.E.L.D. is, right? The strategic homeland. What was it? The strategic homeland.
Well, it varies because there's the comic version of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
which is
for homeland got to be in common.
Oh, headquarters.
Yeah, supreme headquarters things.
And then it was also, by the way, S.H.I.E.L.D. was Strategic Homeland International Law Enforcement Division was the one in the movies, right? And then the S.H.I.E.L.D. in the comics began as the Supreme Headquarters for International Espionage Law Division.
Oh, okay.
And it was also the Strategic Hazard Intervention Espionage and Logistics Directorate. That was also the other one. But my favorite, I think, is Strike, which is the British version, the MI6 version of S.H.I.E.L.D., which was the most British of names, which was the Special Tactical Reserve for International Key Emergencies. Has there ever been a more British?
There was that one, and then there was in one of the few few issues of Captain Britain I ever saw.
Yeah,
there was a you could tell they were taking their cues from Doctor Who.
Sure.
But, and we're also making a tremendous nod because it was known as Weird Happenings Organization. Who?
The Who? Yeah.
W-H-O, the Weird Happenings Organization. So that, and, you know, you could tell they were pretty much trying to model it on the idea of the kind of agents who would go running around with Doctor Who.
Right.
Certain time bits were. He was known to the government.
Your favorite, because we, you know, right now in July as we are, Cola's all Star Wars all the time. Your Star Wars has not gone without their own And most of it comes from the expanded universe, and some of it comes from comics. Has a lot of their own anacronyms for their agencies.
I did not realize that had snuck in there.
Oh yes. You have let me find a couple of them, because I was a little shocked by the fact that they had that was necessary in the world of Star Wars. I believe you have. I think it was like the RAS or something like that, which is the Republican. I'm sorry, the RAS is from the Rescuers Down Under. That's my fault. The NRI, which is the New Republic Intelligence, is in yours. There are quite a few
which ironically is a hot word for milk.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it plays weird in certain sectors.
So what is the where
got
does
milk
got milk? Oh, gross! I just now have this mental image of not only that being the hot word for milk. The Galactic Alliance Security, by the way, Galactic Alliance Security was gas. This is Lexicon. Well, it was
gas,
Lexicon.
Gas. Yeah.
It was. And GAR, the Grand Army of the Republic, is the GAR, and GAG, which is the Galactic Alliance Guard, secret strike force for Darth Cadus. But regardless, so what is the importance
of course, the Royal Air Force Supreme Headquarters, which they decided to get rid of.
Was there one? Royal Air Force.
Nobody wants a rash.
Okay, thank you. I was going through it. Could you hear it in my brain? I was like, okay, R, A.
I beg your pardon, sir. Nobody wants a rash.
Just prepare yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, for the next 45 minutes. It will be pun central here. I'm sure in my brain I'm working up like bung. What can I work? Like a group. I've got group, and I got a B. United National Group. I'm going to have as many of them as I can come up with. But what are the importance of a spy organization or a spy or a secret organization in comics? Because the one that comes to mind, if I'm talking about a secret organization, is the and I can never pronounce this. Help me out. It makes me sound like a fool, and I'm admitting it now. I'm putting it into the world. Is it the Illuminati? Is it the Illuminati? Is it the Illuminati? I think it's the Illuminati, right?
I think it's the Illuminati. It's like that they are like shining their protean light upon the world.
Okay.
But so secretly that it doesn't seem like they're shining a light upon the world.
Right.
I think it is literally meant to be the illuminated, those who have been illuminated.
I like it. Okay.
Brought into the mysteries of the organization.
Okay. The door has been opened to them.
They're smarter than you.
Okay, that helps. Now I won't forget it. The Illuminati, the Illuminate. Okay, so Marvel Comics, the Illuminati is the secret organization that comes into my brain when I'm thinking about massive comic global conspiracy secret organization stuff. And it was a fairly recent development from Cole and I's recent comic book past, because we go into the Wayback Machine where superheroes join hands over a crystal ball and summon their other selves from another world. But you know, that was
Mr. Peabody. Comics were simple in your day. Right?
Shut up, kid. Get back in the basement. But
they didn't write to story arcs back in my day.
That's right. When we had a 2-issue story arc, we were happy about it. The
three-issue got a bit cumbersome.
The Illuminated, the Illuminati, consisted of what? Doctor Strange, Richards,
that's right. Black Bolt,
Tony Stark. Captain America was a part of it, even though they ended up wiping his brain so he would forget the secret teachings. He got Zatanna'd.
Wow, what's the point there? You know, you get in there, and especially they put him in charge of reading the minutes. He goes, I have no idea what any of this stuff is.
Right, where did this come from? Well, I think the idea was much like you know, what they always threatened to do to Batman, and I guess probably did at some point, was, you know, he was too good to have this information. He would have released it to the world. He would have, you know, he would have spoiled their plans for greater good, you know, because they were doing evil in the short term, so that he, so they had to get rid of the information in his brain. But only in a comic book world does a secret organization at that level function, because what they were keeping secret essentially was the location of the Infinity Gems. So,
oh, okay, yeah.
So you could literally dissolve time and space with these things. So we're going to put the big brains on it and keep them safe, and they're going to meet in a secret hideout once a month and talk about, you know, that's sort of the only way it makes sense. How do you feel that plays into the comic book world?
I think that's one of the more sensible, you know, secret societies, and they're often, you have them out of a unique necessity. And if there's anything the Earth does well in the Marvel Universe, is that's to just drop itself teabaggingly onto the rest of the universe.
This is true.
And yeah, just literally, we just sort of come in. We're like this backwater world that came out of nowhere and decided it was the center of the universe, or just sort of happened that way.
Well, I think that we are the douchebags at the truck stop.
They have taken it upon themselves to do these things.
We are the county douchebags at the truck stop. That's what we are. It's not our fault. You know, it's by freak of nature that it's been said in Marvel and in DC in one way or another that the reason that all this stuff happens to Earth, and you don't hear about a bunch of stuff happening on the Kree home world or the Xandarian, you know, wherever it might be, is that for some reason the nexus of the galaxy sits at Earth. So Earth really is at, you know, it's right outside of the airport for, you know, for comic book universes. It just happens to have fallen right on douchebag county. So we all sit in our jacked up trucks drinking Coors Light in the you're funny looking, Skrull.
Yeah,
you know, that's our,
we don't count to you out here, Skrull.
Thank you. I was actually thinking earlier, and I'm not kidding, I was thinking, this is not on topic, I was thinking earlier today, I've been using the word cotton a lot. And I was like, it's going to make it into the podcast tonight. And you beat me to it. So
wow.
Our hive mind strikes again.
Our secret cotton. And we'll be working the rest of the show on the anagram for cotton.
Okay, it's the Central Organization to Totally Oppose Douchebags. That is cotton. No, because why did I put D at the end?
D, yeah. Well, they're not very good spellers.
Silent. It's silent. It's Nordic. It's got a J and a. So yeah, no, I agree. But like, does sword or shield or, you know, what are some other ones from the comics?
Some various ones. Well, one that came to mind was, because it's often just simply enunciated as Thunder Agent.
Mm-hmm.
From the independent Tower Comics, but it actually stood for the Higher United Nations Defense Enforcement Reserves. They would be Thunder Agents. But
the Higher United Nations.
Higher United Nations. So I'm guessing maybe in their world there was even higher than the United Nations was the aptly named Higher United Nations. And apparently their enemies must have been Spider.
Oh, no, really?
Secret People's International Directorate for Extra Legal
I love extra legal as a word. I love that as a word.
I know. That's beautiful. I'd never encountered extra legal. So,
no, it's not illegal.
It's not legal. It's extra legal.
Right. It's not illegal. It's just, it's like extraordinary. It's not like it's ordinary. It's ordinary plus. So yeah, the idea that we have a need for spies in a world where we have Thor, or we have Professor X, or we have, you know, Batman. I guess Batman would technically be one of the, Batman has his own super secret organization, and it's called Batman, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, not only does Batman have his own, oddly enough, you know, and when we're speaking of anagrammatic,
right?
Granimals or whatever.
Animals. Animagraminals.
Animagraminals. That's where there's an animal, cartoon animal to represent each letter of your anagram name.
Well, wasn't there that, what was the one with the pet? We Three? Wasn't that an animagraminal?
They may well have been. Granimals.
Aminograminals.
But there was, speaking of Batman and anagrams combined, the OMAC project.
Mm.
In fact, OMAC himself, who was not necessarily a secret agent, but was definitely one of the kings of anagrams, which was the one-man Army Corps.
Right.
When I was a kid, Army Corps, which seemed rather strange to me. But I think that Batman's OMAC here we are, Observational Metahuman Activity Construct.
Right.
Which, while that is a nice retooling of OMAC for the purpose of Batman having his own secret automaton army,
right,
of Paranoiaville,
Paranoiaville, which is adjacent to Muggerville, by the way,
naturally adjacent.
It's over the river. It's over the river, and it would have to be naturally adjacent because everybody in Paranoiaville would obviously be paranoid of Muggerville. So naturally, they're going to... naturally! Can you just Barney Fife me? But obviously, right? Obviously. But what were you saying? I'm sorry, I derailed.
Say the OMAC project, the OMAC of OMAC project, was, you know, literally, I guess, the ultimate secret agency because it was privately held.
That's true. That's true. No one else got to know.
And, you know, when you build your own agency that way, you pretty much...
That's very true. That's very true. But so speak to the reasoning behind is it you know, Cold War ramp up, self-fulfilling prophecy, you know,
I think a lot of people from Paranoiaville are recruited because you need that. But it becomes a kind of escalation or the old logic, if we don't do it, someone else will.
Right.
You know, you have to allow yourself a kind of Buck Turgeson, we can't have a mineshaft gap!
Right.
Kind of mentality. And it is, if you look at these agencies, they're primarily run by military types. You have, like, Sarge Steele, who ran some... Didn't Sarge Steele, like, run the original Suicide Squad?
I believe so.
Before came on board?
I believe so.
Because, you know, you had most of the DC Comics secret agents had sort of fallen into obscurity. One wonders what became of King Faraday.
Oh, he's still around.
Oh, he's, really? Thank God.
Yeah, he in the new 52, or I guess the new 52 now.
It took me a second pass when reading the original Who's Who.
The 104.
To catch the King Faraday.
King Faraday.
He's like, oh my god. Oh, the only thing worse than anagrams is pun names. It's like Sally Forth or... Another one that...
Well, with all due respect, Sergeant Nick Fury is a pun in and of itself.
True.
Sergeant Fury. Just always the best name. Just... He's so angry that it manifested in his name just all the time.
You know, you could see that the lineage was this family from the Andaluvian that had always been
Right.
You know, the king, and I declare thee the Fury family, and sorts well with your fierceness.
Well, like, my family, you know, we're farmers, and literally we came from farmers. That's where we came from. Like, oh, well, what are you? Oh, your last name's Fury. What did you do? We were angry. Just, we were
our
the angriest
comes from
people.
Our boundless rage.
Angriest people in town. Just
that's right.
Constantly angry. But
wasn't a lot of money in anger.
This is one of those episodes. This is usually the episode that follows the story arc. Yeah. Like, we're finally getting it out. Just punchy, weird episode. I love it. It's great. Tell me how you feel, because there's one, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh.
There's a really bad instance of super spydom, right? And it was in the 60s, and that was Diana Prince lost her powers.
Oh yes.
And became Wonder Woman's Diana Prince super spy with kung fu.
Yeah, with kung fu and a white outfit that was so bright you could see it from space.
Right.
The line in the very obscure Roger Moore film Folks or North Sea Hijack, depending on which superstation you're watching, where he's issued this dark orange wetsuit for this night raid. Oh, wetsuit and vermilion, that's a good idea.
Nice!
And it's the same sort of thing. You don't, you really don't want to dress head to toe in the brightest, obvious color. There's a reason that Snake Eyes is so successful, and one baffles at the impunity with which Storm Shadow operates.
Right. Well, first of all, I can't remember a time when Storm Shadow doesn't end five or six issues of the comic or two or three issues of the cartoon, or even the movies, where he doesn't get caught at some point.
And speaking of, and this had to have come from the comics, because they were able to, you know, delve much deeper into the characters and the organizations and stuff. Apparently, Cobra is an anagram.
Yeah, yeah.
I assumed that it was just a badass animal that was a good choice. It, you know.
Right.
You know, it's like George Carlin talks about, you know, you don't call your football team the mice. That's what I want for the pink and white. It actually stands for Criminal Organization. Okay, we're off to a good start.
Yeah.
Of bloodiness,
right?
Revenge and assassination. Okay, I thought Spectre settled with revenge. In this case, they settled even harder.
They settled on bloodiness.
The organization of bloodiness. Bloodiness.
You could even sell that to MMA fighters.
Just go ahead and call yourself Cobra as just a word.
Even
at that point,
even Bobby at that point would be like, hold up his hand and be like, listen guys, I'm all for this, like, but bloodiness, I'm okay. Revenge and assassination, I mean, we're putting it out front, you know, we're not burying the lead, but I'm okay with it. It's truth in advertising.
Yeah.
But bloodiness, like, because second to that is no blood happens in G.I. Joe, in any iteration of G.I. Joe,
ever. In any way. And the thing about it is that, as anagrammatic names go, G.I. Joe is at least trying to take itself seriously. You know, but they wind up, when somebody decided, maybe Larry Hama in a fit of pique decides this has to be an anagram all of a sudden.
It was an editorial mandate, I'm sure.
I don't think that's what, you know, Hasbro had in mind, but that's neither here nor there. But that's right. I mean, that would be a fitting anagram, like Chump from Lancelot Link, the criminal headquarters for the underworld's master plan.
Right.
That's where that kind of works. But I mean, seriously, you have to live down that anagram to the point where you just stop putting the periods in.
Right. You at some point start dropping the periods. There's a rebranding that happens about halfway through. I like AIM a lot. Because AIM is straightforward. AIM is what it's supposed to be, you know? Advanced Idea Mechanics. That could be Apple. That could be Microsoft, you know? Okay, yeah, we're AIM. We're Advanced Idea Mechanics. Yeah, we're
gonna. As far as you know, they're making motherboards and
exactly.
Vacuums and, you know, things to make life better for decent people.
Right, right.
Secretly, they have this agenda.
That's
of a bunch of guys in beekeeper outfits.
And then you go like Hydra. They didn't even bother. There isn't an anagram for Hydra. It's just straight up.
Yeah.
They
actually Darren Stoker agonized for months before settling on it's just a name.
Well, Nemean
and
Lion
really
didn't work.
The big turning point. Yeah, well, the big turning point on Hydra was on making Hydra an anagram, because they were working on it. They had a whole team of literary agents, you know,
right.
Literal types. They were trying to work out what kind of words to use. And many a man, you know, went up against the wall because he failed miserably with his anagrams. Yearling? Seriously?
Yearling.
A young horse? What does that have to do with what we're doing here? that
Yearling.
Just to name one of them. But, you know, when they finally just decided to settle on the fact that it's just a badass name. And the real turning point was that when Cobra Commander decided that Cobra was an anagram. Seriously, we are not, you know, with apologies to those that died on the firing squad, we're not going there after all.
We're going to stick with what we got.
I did notice that I wasn't familiar enough with the enemies of Captain Carrot and his amazing zoo crew.
Yeah.
Acrostic, a cabal recently organized solely to instigate crimes, which has a built-in expiration date.
Right.
What do you do on the, you know, first or fifth or tenth anniversary of acrostic? It becomes a bit of a fallacy at that point.
Well, not only that, but I believe, and don't quote me on this, and maybe Jefferson or Kelly can help me with this, but I believe, and maybe you could help me with this, because I don't know it well enough, but if you read it, right?
Yeah.
I believe it's an iambic pentameter, but I'm not sure.
Could somebody
look into this and tell me whether...
Can someone get Kenneth Branagh to say this out loud? Because that really is the litmus test.
It is. You know, Kenneth Branagh takes stuff that isn't in iambic pentameter and can say it in iambic pentameter.
You can read the phone book and it becomes iambic.
Right. So why S.H.I.E.L.D.? Why do we need S.H.I.E.L.D. in comic books? I'm asking.
There's like so many of these questions, there become two answers. There become the internal and the external answers. The internal answer is, of course, you need S.H.I.E.L.D. to answer all of the myriad things that occur in the world that, you know, if anything, the Avengers have shown us a long history of abandoning Earth for the big fight. Let's go fight in the Kree-Skrull War and leave the least powerful Avengers behind.
That's true. That's very true. Okay.
Gutted the team. They left four guys behind. One of them is a super soldier, two mutants, and a guy who shoots arrows well. Why don't we just invite the Shoveler to join the fun?
We're Stiltman when you need him.
That's right. So you need a pinch hitter. You need somebody coming in. You need an understudy to come in and fill in these gaps. Because there are times when the Avengers or the Fantastic Four will fight Godzilla once. And the rest of the time, Dum Dum Duggan has to drive around in a helicarrier at tremendous expense to taxpayers, I might add.
Right.
I campaigned for the presidency of the fake Marvel America, in which sometimes real presidents actually get voted into office, it seems. But... you know, you actually, in some cases, they become something of a necessity. You need that sort of organization that can be your sort of Mission Impossible. The government can say, though, they never really signed off on that part. You know, if these guys ever do anything outrageous, though, they overstep their bounds.
Right.
And and people get caught in the crossfire, like that donut shop owner in the She-Hulk graphic novel.
Wow.
The jet fall on him and his... And as much as John Byrne tried to put a playful face on this, this isn't the G.I. Joe cartoon, and that guy's pretty much dead.
Right.
And from the external standpoint, you need that ability to have a human-based organization within the world of the superhuman. What they serve as is Thor, Iron Man, Hulk, are going across the street there to Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern. These are the pantheon of Olympus. Come down to Earth.
Right.
To, you know, stand up for the Greeks or what have you. But the Greeks need their own heroes. They need their Achilles, their Ajax, their other A-named.
Correct. Right. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
And so from a very classical standpoint, and Kelly may be pretty proud of me for making this corollary, they become the hero, the above the human, but still human.
So you're saying they become
the
half gods.
Well, they're the ones actually who are more like those who, Odysseus.
Okay.
They're like the Argonauts. And like the Argonauts, they've got a really kick-ass ship.
Right. Yeah, this is true.
And they drive around, get into adventures. And there's a Cyclops. In this case,
literally. Literally a Cyclops. And a Tempest.
Yeah.
And wait a second.
So we have unearthed the secret history of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Wait. This is interesting, and I remember we talked about this way back in the Collector Sector days. There is a secret history of the S.H.I.E.L.D. That S.H.I.E.L.D. used to be a group of it used to be Leonardo da Vinci, one of the pharaohs, who else was it? They were the precursors to the S.H.I.E.L.D. we know today. This was the secret history of S.H.I.E.L.D. Thing that they did.
That's right.
Yes. So you aren't wrong. There is a secret where Galactus came to Earth in the Renaissance times, and they had to stop him. So they, you know, came together in all of their weird, you know, their weirdo glory and.
But also I think that there may have been this sort of subconscious, or I'm just simply applying this, but you can look at this as, in much the same way that Oh Brother, Where Art Thou was the, based on the Odyssey.
Right.
You do get a bit of the classical hero's journey with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, certainly with Coulson. If you want to really look at a hero's journey, go for it. Tell it up, Cole.
Absolutely. So, you know, the purpose of this is to give you that grounded, the human hero that, you know, Hercules walked the earth and had adventures, but occasionally, and not the Kevin Sorbo one with his hetero life partner.
Aeolus.
Yeah, the actual Hercules occasionally would go run around with some pals of his, and he did hook up with the Argonauts for a while, I believe, and he'd go and mingle with the non-demigods, because in many ways he was closer to them than he was to the gods.
Right.
Especially being reviled by his father's actual wife.
That's true.
So you did have to kind of let go and hang out with the commoners, but you know you need your average hero who can go out and walk among the gods, but who isn't necessarily elevated to the demigod status of say Hawkeyes or your your Green Arrows and such, who are just really, really good.
Right.
Or your, even your Batmans, of which there are now a bunch.
Right.
But,
also, all over the place.
Speaking of secret societies, one of my, now that I've had some time to really digest this, one of my favorite secret societies, and I don't know that much about it, but every now and again I've kind of dug in a little bit on it, was, of course, the BPRD.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I wanted to get into non-mainstream.
That is a clever concept.
Right. Right. No, it is. Okay, so there's a piece of this that we haven't talked about. We've talked about comics, secret societies, secret agencies, secret agents in the worlds in which there are superheroes. Right?
Yeah.
But in the world of BPRD, there aren't. That isn't the world that they exist in. They are the superheroes.
No, they don't have guys flying capes.
Right. So,
well said.
So we have to have that. You know, in those worlds, the BPRD is the last line of defense when Cthulhu comes a knocking. You know, if this world's a rockin', Cthulhu's probably a knocking. So you need Hellboy, you need Abe Sapien, you need guys like the one you brought up when we were talking about this initially, which is Amazing Screw on Head, which is just so cool. And I don't think a lot of people know what that is, so if you care to enlighten them.
Yeah, the Amazing Screw on Head is a funny thing. The character was a little one-shot by Hellboy creator Mike Mignola, and it takes place. I would equate it to the fantasy comic version of the Wild Wild West, because it takes place during the Lincoln presidency.
Which is awesome.
And has a very Victorian, what many would just simply call steampunk.
Yes.
But it does that steampunk without being... It's actually more like the Wild Wild West. I mean, I guess technically people would watch the Wild Wild West and call it steampunk. But it was before that term was unfortunately coined. And
I believe the genre is Weird West is the actual genre that they refer to that being in.
So this is one of these weird historical period type things, and basically what you've got with this is you have this robot of this Victorian period who. His head is like a light bulb. It's threaded at the neck, and he can screw it into various bodies.
It's so cool. It's such a good idea.
And he's like this secret agent in the employ of the president. And it actually, I forget who it was, like HBO or somebody did a little one-shot.
It was great. It was
cartoon
great.
Based on... Yeah, and they took the core concept. And both of them are equally fun. And full of hilarious little moments, but each of them are a little different. And the one thing the cartoon did brilliantly was to give that capture those Victorian sensibilities, which actually the comic did as well. But in the cartoon, because you could actually convey more things, there's this giant image of Abraham Lincoln of his face and shoulders, and the mouth is like on a little flip-flopping panel. So as Abraham Lincoln is speaking to him via some precursor to the telephone, the mouth is flipping back and forth, creating this sort of cartoony image of him actually talking, like, Amazing Screw on Head, I need you.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the most brilliant, because that is a very Victorian thinking. I'd seen a thing on the Panama Canal ages ago, and they're literally the controls for the canal gates. Are like little miniatures of the gates. Are like little miniature representations of the gates.
Oh, really?
So you literally move two levers that represent the two gates, and it's all lined up on this console that's like, you know, 20 yards long, because it represents the entire damn canal in miniature. Because that was the thinking.
You had to recreate in miniature to actually there weren't computer models. We didn't have CAD. You know, you had to actually
nobody thought just to have a bunch of knobs and say, you know, this is for gate one, this is for gate two. It was a visual in three dimensions. And so I love that aspect of, so if you can look, dig up Amazing Screw on Head. because it's a fun little secret agent story set in a different period that's just completely bizarre.
Hey, Cole, you think you got what it takes to be a member of the BPRD? What do you think?
Personally, wow.
Yeah.
I think I personally be able to wrap my head around weird things in a hurry, but at the same time, I'd probably piss myself the sight of some of the weird things they see. So,
I'm
kind of torn there.
We can find out. In Portland, there's an organization called the Trackers Portland that have an official BPRD training camp in the Bay Area.
Wow.
Yeah, and this is a real thing. If you go to trackerspdx.com, you can find it. It's Hellboy Camp. This is a real thing. They are running this camp. They have recruitment and training. They have a call to action where the recruits get actual field time during the camp, learning with hands-on and essential survival skills such as shelter building, stealth, tactical, and martial arts training, whereas the younger recruits train survival and field skills in local green spaces. They have overnight camp. So this is a real thing. You can go to Portland and have registered with Dark Horse Comics BPRD training camp, which is amazing. Now, tuition's a little expensive, I will warn you, but can you really put a price on
that kind of training? Where are you going to get that elsewhere?
That's right. So I thought that was hilarious. When I was doing research, I found an official BPRD training camp. I would love to go. I would love to go to see, like do field reporting from the BPRD training camp. That is amazing. I can only imagine where we investigate reports of dark figures and strange happenings at the camp. That is great. Good thinking, Trackers Portland. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, man, I like that a lot. Another one that came to mind, I only sort of encountered it back in our buying of tonnages of comics to resell days. Or maybe it was during the days of the store. The Antarctic Press,
okay,
in San Antonio, Ben Dunn's outfit, had a series called The Agents.
Yes.
And the Agents was really kind of clever in that it seemed to invoke every... It was like the Leave Extraordinary Gentlemen for spy stuff. But because the spy stuff wasn't public domain, you get nods and winks and little hints
cool.
at these being like characters.
That's cool.
Without being them. There was the Jerry Anderson Thunderbirds?
Yes.
There was, of course, a James Bond-like character. There was the Steed and Mrs. Peel, the Avengers-type characters. Kato and the Green Hornet type characters.
Okay.
So it's every everything you'd ever seen within spy and secret society or secret agencies sorts of things as one organization.
That's awesome. So it's like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's called The Agents. I never read it. I knew of its existence.
It's called The Agents. Yeah. Okay, you have like characters like Dr. Faustus Quatermain. Judging from the images, it's based on the old British Quatermass project.
Yes.
You have Red Bee and Haiku. the Tomahawks.
The Tomahawks. That's awesome.
And I'm just like, this is brilliant stuff. It's the same sort of, it's just taking all of those things you're accustomed to. I think there's even sort of a, there's even a nod to The Prisoner.
Oh, really? That's so cool. Like that, I'm gonna have
and
to pick
course,
that up.
Nigel Cord.
I'm gonna have to pick that up. That sounds really interesting. So,
I can't help but wonder if he refers to himself as Cord. Nigel Cord.
because it's, of course, not Bond. It's Cord.
Yeah, and I can't help but wonder, you know, what would be really cool is to find out that the authors based that character on the name of some British bird-watching
author. That would be great.
Some British ornithologist named
that just hated his Cord. That hated his job, like
because Ian Fleming wanted to come up with the most boring name he could. Apparently, prior to Ian Fleming, James Bond was a boring sounding name.
If he has a legacy, there it is.
Yes, indeed. Ian Fleming, that was the name of the author of a book on, I think it was like tropical birds of state that he had laying around the house.
That's great. I didn't know that.
Guy has a dull ass name.
Like, let's just go
with
that.
What's amazing is, you know, the what he perceived as the most dull name became the sexiest name.
Right. Now you can't get away from it, right?
Yeah. So, you know, maybe Nick Fury wasn't have very much of a ring to it after all.
So let's as we come up on the end of the show, we've still got like about 10 minutes left. I think that we would be remiss. We opened with, you know, your shields and your hydras. There is one super group or one spy organization, one secret organization that I think bears discussing that hasn't been discussed yet. And if we make it out of this without talking about it, we would be doing a disservice. And that is the book that was written by Lowell Cunningham it was Lowell Cunningham and Sandy Carruthers. Way back in 1990, made a movie about it, none other than the Men in Black, the ultimate secret organization. Yeah. Brilliant for its time, addressed and tackled so many cool ideas about the life of the secret agent, the secret organization.
And the funny thing about it is, prior to the movie, I said, you know, based on a Marvel comic, like, what the hell are you talking about? Where was I? How did I not know this? And
right.
Apparently there was just a hell of a lot of stuff I didn't know about.
Well, I mean, keep in mind, when this got picked up, right, it started as a three-issue, about 3 issues released on Aircell Comics. So it was
Aircell Comics. Wow.
Super independent. You had a better chance than I think probably anybody on the face of the earth for knowing what it was. You know, due to what you did, due to Diamond, due to Piece of the Action. But even it says something that it was so independent and so obscure that even you didn't know. You know, but the ideas in it was later bought by Malibu, and then later Malibu was bought by Marvel. So that all got encapsulated and folded in and of, you know, in on itself. But the success of it was based on the idea that it was so strong. You know, the idea that you had, you know, these secret agents, like, because the stories of the Men in Black go back to Roswell, and there's all this speculation as to who they were, what they were doing, who they worked for. To have this sort of organization that was, you know, that was super high tech, but in some respects held together by like bubblegum and baling wire, you know, puns. Aliens are all over the earth, and it's less of us being, you know, like going out and hunting them and finding them. Kind of the bureaucracy of the whole thing, you know, the diplomacy. Really cool ideas, and the comic books did it absolute, or the movies did the comics absolute justice. You know, well, why can we never remember? You know, so they have the disremembering technology,
the zappy flashy thing.
Yeah, like it's just a really cool idea. So okay, so now we know. Now we know what the Men in Black are. So there you go. Yeah, and I think that there's something that exists in the human zeitgeist that makes the idea of the unknown known that translates really well in comics. It does it in TV as well, but I think more so like all things, in my opinion, I've said it before, I've been saying it for 3 years now, that I do believe that comic books in their purest form are the best way to tell a narrative. You know, because you were unrestrained completely. You were only restrained.
Absolutely. And I think a great example of that is the highly acclaimed Queen and Country by Greg Rucka.
Greg Rucka. God, can he write a story, man. Just insane. So good. Queen of Country was amazing.
And, you know, within that context, you have that, you know, boots on the ground kind of secret agent sort of reality that is, you know, as a comic is juxtaposed against the your Shields and your Suicide Squads and things like that, where you can take a more fanciful approach, or your men in blacks.
Your men in blacks.
But, men.
So what was for those that haven't read it and need a primer as to what Queen and Country is, what was it about? Do you remember?
I believe it's certainly a very English,
right?
But it's basically, you know, special operations.
But there aren't superheroes in it.
But it, you know, yeah, no. This is just like real spy stuff. This is like Chiquilini and Pinky and
okay.
That's too, you know. This is spy stuff.
This is spy stuff.
And it's one of my favorite lines. But you know, it basically told the stories of. In many ways, I think it was a lot like the MI6 series on BBC. Where
you okay.
Kind of just like. Embedded in a way with the special operations or secret services, and you know, the highest people who go out and do what they do for Queen and Country in this case, and can never talk about it, can never be recognized for it.
Right, star on the wall type stuff.
Exactly.
Right on.
And so you know, the comics are replete with this sort of thing, and I think you hit the nail on the head. It's a necessity because in the real world you have this, and everything is a magnification of the real world.
Right.
You know, you want the hero to come in and break up the fight or save the day or stop the bad guy, and you need an exaggeration of the necessity. Of secret operations.
Right. I agree. Okay, so let's go ahead and wrap it up. We'll get the plugs in there. There are a million other things that we wanted to talk about in this hour that we're not going to get the opportunity to, like Dick Grayson joining Spiral after his supposed death. One of the ones I wanted to get to was Spider-Woman and her, what is she now, a quadruple agent between S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra. They went crazy. Brian Bendis went crazy with that. Like, oh, okay,
yeah.
So you're a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, but you're working for Hydra, but we know you're working for Hydra, so we want you to double agent for S.H.I.E.L.D. again, but you're also now working for Hydra because Hydra knows you're working for S.H.I.E.L.D., but you're also working for S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, stop it. Stop.
Yeah, it becomes sort of like that convoluted notion in an essay that one of my college professors had tremendous difficulty with. He was blasting this essayist for when speaking on the actions of it was something along the lines of some movie, this woman was hired to pretend like she was in love, and she actually falls in love, and then she must pretend to pretend. And he had such difficulty with that. And I thought, why? That is actually the perfect phrasing. She is pretending to pretend that she's in love.
Yeah, you're pretending to pretend that you don't understand this right now.
Yeah. And so with that little bit of convoluted doublespeak...
Why don't you go ahead and wrap us up there, buddy?
All right. I can disclose that we're coming to you through the Meet-No basis from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. There will be occasional dispatches on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. You can write to us in lemon juice on rice paper to jcumail@yahoo.com, and we will use the appropriate means to reveal your secret messages with our decoder rings. And you can certainly public knowledge is the prevalence and presence of conventions of fan interest in the state of Texas, which you can find at Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info, because you can't go if you don't know.
That's right. And if and you now know. And
occasionally you can hear myself, and yeah, now you know. So you needed to know, and now you know, so off you go. Yo ho ho.
Oh, okay. I think we drove it into the ground. No? Yeah. See what I did? Hey. Yeah. I gotcha. Okay. I'm sorry, you could occasionally hear Cole and Eddie Medina continue. I'm trying to get you back on track here.
Yes, you can also find Eddie Medina and myself both on the Jedi Kong Universe and at deepelemonair.com on the what the hell is that show? The Rancor Pit on Deep Elm on Air, the Rancor Pit live in the month of July, starting July 5th and continuing every for a month of Sundays. Rancor Pit Live and Deep Elm on Air are proud to bring you The Force of July. Our normally every other week show on Deep Elm on Air is going for a full month of weekly shows.
That's awesome. That's great. All right, so yeah, everybody.
Myself and or Eddie, and we're launching that on the fifth, with a special 2-hour episode.
Wow.
Tonight on very special Rancor Pit Live.
That's right.
And it's chock-a-block full of guests, including What'd You Think's own Bobby Blakey.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
Indeed, yes.
All right, so everybody out there, buy, collect, and enjoy your comics. We will not tell you that this
either
message...
publicly or in secret.
Yeah, right? In your secret hideout, otherwise known as... Skullduggery. I'll leave it to you to figure out what that stands for. That's a long one.
Or lair, the lounging area in
repose. Lounging. Yes. So we're gonna head out, guys. Enjoy your 4th of July. I know it's gonna be after. Well, maybe before, maybe after when you hear this. But enjoy it. Be safe. Have fun. And this message may or may not self-destruct. Good night, everybody. Say good night, Cole.
Good night, everyone.
And live in juice.
Good night, everyone.
Live in juice and rice paper. I love it. I'm gonna carry that one with me.
Swinging on the Riviera one day, and then laying in the Bombay Alley next day. Slip while kissing persuasive lips. The odds are you won't live to see tomorrow.